Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehr on WNYC. One World Trade Center now has its spire, as you've probably seen from different angles all across the city and from New Jersey. The tower now stands at 1,776 feet high, making it the tallest building in the Western Hemisphere. That symbolic height, 1776, was one of the original design elements for the site from architect Daniel Libeskind. His concept for the tower drew from the Statue of Liberty, the symbol that welcomed him to New York Harbor as a teen immigrating to America. I'm very happy to welcome Daniel Libeskind back to WNYC. He joins me now from Bucharest. Hello, Daniel.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
So I understand you were in the city recently. Did you get to see the spire atop One World Trade?
Yes, I did. Of course. Who could miss it? It's such a fantastic new skyline of New York and Lower Manhattan particularly. And it's meaningful because it's not just the tallest building in the world, which will be surpassed somewhere else, but it really represents the resonance of liberty around the world. And you know, the Statue of Liberty, which inspired my project, holds in her hand the Declaration of Independence, which, actually, if you read it, it's really a document of human rights to the world.
So how did you get that idea for 1776 feet high?
Well, I thought about the Statue of Liberty because that's what I saw first when I arrived by ship to New York as an immigrant. And I thought, you know, it's not just the torch that this incredible symbol holds, but it holds the Declaration of Independence, which is, after all, the document about human liberty and freedom. And that's really what this site also speaks to. It's not just a beautifully rebuilt site of buildings and a memorial, but speaks symbolically to the importance of the skies, to the aspiration of this great city and of America and of the world. So I thought it was really something that will never be surpassed. No matter how tall another building is, it will never surpass that symbolic number, 1776.
Listeners, we have a few minutes for your phone calls here with architect Daniel Libeskind. Now with the spire in place, what's been your reaction to the tower when you've seen it on the skyline? Does it have significance for you that it didn't before that spire was in place? Does it make you feel emotional? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 is the phone number to call. And remember, we may be in the pledge drive, but if you get on the air, we will never ask you for money while you're on the air. So call in with what you feel about seeing that spire in place, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So, Daniel Libeskind, some of the original elements of your design included that 1,776 feet high, but you originally had the spire going out at an angle to more sort of to echo the Statue of Liberty's arm.
Well, it was perhaps more prominent, but I think the building which is standing now is really very powerful, and I think it sends that message to the world, and I think it's an anchor of the other towers because it's the highest point, and that those other towers I really distributed in the plan so that they really, even though they stand in the grid of Lower Manhattan, they really echo the torch, which really is sort of surrounding the memorial site itself so that we don't have shadows and we have really good street perspectives without, you know, wind tunnels and so on. So, yes, I used the entire composition of buildings to also to refer to the Torch of Liberty, as I used other devices. You know, I preserved the slurry wall, that incredible foundation which was tragically revealed during that attack. I created also an additional public space from Broadway, the Wedge of Light, which is marked by Tower Number 2 and the central dramatic skyline of the Pet Terminal, which speaks of the times of the attack, 8:46 in the morning when the first tower was struck and 10:28 when the second tower collapsed. So that's also sort of a memorial in the light of a day. And I also proposed in my original competition also waterfalls, which is also something about life, assertion of life, nature, and so on. So many of these elements are in the plan.
I understand you were one of the only finalists to visit the World Trade Center site when you were working on that original proposal. Just talk to me about what it's been like to watch it take shape over time and then seeing, did it feel different when you finally saw that spire in place?
Oh my God, yeah, definite. You know, I live just north of the site, and I work just south of the site. I pass it every day. You know, I see it from my living room, I see it from my bedroom, I see it from my studio. So yes, I saw the site really changing, the atmosphere changing from a kind of emptiness and sadness into something that speaks of the resilience of the site, the memory, which is really such a key component. You know, out of the 16 acres that site possesses, about half of it, almost 8 acres, are public space. Are places for people, are places, social places. So, yes, I saw it. The site really changed dramatically and really become something positive, something that speaks not just to the tragedy, which cannot be undone, but really lays foundation for a 21st century New York with all its beautiful vistas, its diversity, its dramatic buildings, and so on.
John, from Watchung, I understand you've been watching the tower being built and you saw that spire go up. What do you think?
Oh, I'm so glad to see it go up. My grandfather worked for Harris Structural Steel. It was one of the fabricating firms that made the steel for the original Twin Towers. And we would look out at it over the Watchung Mountains. And he was always so proud to show guests that I built those towers. And he was able to watch them very tearfully when they went down. But to see them come up again, it's been a great thing for us.
That's wonderful. And Gene, in Jersey City, you've also been watching this?
Are you ready?
Gene, are you there?
Here.
Hi, Gene. You've been watching. You saw the. What do you think about the spire being up? Do you see the site differently now?
Yeah, it's different because when I was listening to WNC NYC, and I still hadn't gone out for the morning. So when they said the spire was up or whatever time of day it was, I put on my fuzzy robe and my fuzzy slippers and went downstairs and stood on my porch and looked to make sure they had really put it up. And it's nice. I really like it. I love the building. I got a picture from my son in Florida. I'm trying to figure out how he got a picture on Facebook. But it's really nice. I enjoy it. I like it. But it's not quite the same. I just miss the old building. I really miss the old building because I could see it from my kitchen stove when I'd be cooking in the morning. When I came in from work from Raritan, it would be sitting on the yellow line on 78 East. I would be 45 minutes out. It would be on the white, on the yellow line. Mm-hmm. And when I would come up the turnpike from Houston down in southern Maryland, it would be on the, because I live right behind the Twin Towers, and I would just say, okay, I'm coming. I mean, right behind the Statue of Liberty. I would just say, okay, I'm coming. I know I'm home now.
I'm on my
and
way
I just,
home.
I missed the original. Yeah. And I watched the building come down. I stood in Jersey City on Arlington Avenue and saw the other one come down, and it hurt me to my heart. I still tear up when I think about it. I'm tearing up now thinking about it.
Thank you so much for your call, Gene. Danielle, it's interesting that the first two callers we got were from New Jersey. They've got a great view of the spire.
Well, absolutely. You know, when I was thinking about the master plan and positioning Tower Number 1, the Freedom Tower, as it was called, and all the other towers around the memorial, I thought about how it would look, not just from one angle, but from all angles, from New Jersey, from the Bronx, from Brooklyn, from Queens, really from the entire metropolitan region, because it's going to be a very dramatic crown that really points to the memorial and the public spaces down on the cityscape. And I think it will be a very moving, I think, when all the buildings are completed, it'll be a very powerful urban composition that really speaks to the sky, but also creates, I think, really good spaces for people on the streets. I concentrated really on the streets, on open spaces, so that we have a beautiful views of the Hudson River, of World Financial Center, of Battery Park, Tribeca, Chinatown, Wall Street. So the buildings are not squeezed towards, you know, where there are dark alleys, but really where there's open air, where there's sky, where there's as sort of an emergent new neighborhood, really.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My guest is the architect Danielle Liebeskind, who had the winning master plan for the Ground Zero site. And I want to ask you a question about process. You just mentioned all how this fits into the New York City landscape, but you've worked all over the world, and there were so many different people who were stakeholders on this Ground Zero site, between the Port Authority, the city government, state government, the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, and victims' families, of course. Was this process particularly difficult as an architect for you compared to other places that you've worked?
Well, it's complex, but I'm a believer in democracy. You know, in the democracy, it's not an edict which decides, you know, what to do. It is garnering consensus. And perhaps because I was an immigrant, you know, and I came to New York after having lived under a, you know, communist government in Poland, that I appreciated, you know, the to and fro. And of course, it's complicated and it's difficult. And, you know, there are so many voices and emotions. But at the end, I think that's what makes America and this site in New York mean something, because it wasn't done just out of a whim. It reached a broad consensus of all the different stakeholders, starting with the families of the victims, the governors, the Port Authority, mayor, PATH, and MTA authorities. So, yes, I really believe that that's a very important part of this project.
You mentioned democracy, and we've talked about 1,776 feet high and what that means for you in terms of liberty. But it strikes me that when I saw the first headlines of when the spire was up, that the first mention in the media was that it was now the tallest building in the Western Hemisphere. As the architect in that 1,776 feet high, which mattered more to you, those echoes of liberty or also that it was going to be, you know, the tallest building in the Western Hemisphere?
No, emphatically, liberty. Because sooner or later, there will be a taller building built. And I knew that. You know, it'll be in India or China or somewhere else, the tallest building in the world. But to me, it's not really just the physical height of a building that gives it a meaning. It's the power of what it represents. And to me, representing something that has to do with liberty, with human rights, with freedom, that really is why America was struck by these evil terrorists. That is the reason New York was chosen. So that's the response, I think, not just restoring the skyline, but the meaning of this fantastic country, fantastic city that really is so diverse, as people from all over the world. And, you know, I'm not the only immigrant. Almost everybody in New York is an immigrant. So I think that's really the part that interested me and the part which will never be surpassed by any building, no matter how tall.
Richard in Port Chester, what do you think about how the way the building looks now with the spire on top?
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the symbolism of 1776 and the rebirth of the site. I find the architecture of the building itself quite uninteresting, uninventive, and pretty clunky.
Clunky. What do you find clunky about it?
It's very squat. It's not, you know, the spire is sitting on the top of a very sort of a squat building. It just doesn't seem to flow in a beautiful manner. It just doesn't look great to me.
What do you think, Danielle? What stands now is not exactly what you originally designed.
Well, that's a cogent comment. You know, I'm not the architect of record of this building, but you know, whatever the aesthetic critiques of this building, I think at the end, really, it is part of a composition that I think will be more legible once Tower 2, 3, and 4 are built, because it will be that movement upwards towards this tower. And I think in that sense, it will work very well in terms of sort of anchoring this building in the skyline. And I think it will be impressive. It's not a standalone building. It's part of this urban sort of resurrection of the site. And I think the reason I distributed it, you know, I didn't do a megastructure with one tall building or two tall buildings, but I tried to make as many buildings as possible so that they are lower in order to create really a better sense of walking on the streets. Because tall buildings are beautiful, usually from a distance. But I thought, you know, what does it feel like being, you know, in New York in lower Manhattan when you were walking on the streets? Let's make the streets beautiful as well as the skyline.
Richard in Cobble Hill, what have you thought as you saw the spire go up?
I think it's so magnificent. I from my deck in Cobble Hill was on it when the buildings came down, and I didn't have a dry ear, eye for at least a month, and I've watched it come back, and just with such anticipation. And I run over the Brooklyn Bridge in the morning. I've watched, I take pictures of it, I send it to my friends around the country. It's been the most exciting thing for me to see that. And in terms of just kind of what you said about it, anchors, when I look out from my deck now and I see the buildings, which is such a magnificent sight of lower Manhattan, but then to see this beautiful, beautiful structure, and now it just stands out so magnificently beautiful, that I just, as little I can say to say what a gift this has been back to the people, one of New York City, but to the United States and to the world, that, like you said, this is who we are, and this is our statement back to those that did us harm.
Richard, thank you so much for your call. Louise in Brooklyn, what have you thought as you've watched the building go up?
Well, actually, I haven't watched it very much. I was saying to your representative that I've had a negative feeling about the whole rebuilding of the area because, and forgive me if I get emotional, we were very personally affected by the attacks, and all of the hubbub about the rebuilding down there has left me feeling negative. But hearing your host speak, your guest speak, who is an immigrant, and I'm a teacher of immigrant students, he's speaking with such a sensitivity towards America and New York and those families that have been affected. And I really appreciate that you've had him on the air because you've changed my feeling about it. Maybe one day I will be able to go and see it. I can't now. I never have. But I really appreciate that you've had him on the air. Thank you so much.
Oh, Louise, thank you so much for your call. Danielle, what's it been like just talking to New Yorkers who've been watching this? You said you live and work in the area. What's been your conversation with New Yorkers as the building's gone up?
Well, you know, I'm a New Yorker, and you know, my father worked right around the site. My brother-in-law was worked for the Port Authority in the towers. You know, I was there at the site when I was a student of architecture, looking at, you know, this megastructure being built. It's very moving. You know, New Yorkers are tough, but they have really a strong emotional depth. And that depth is also going to be part of the bedrock, because right now we see the memorial, we see the beautiful memorial of Michael Arad, we see the footprints and the waterfalls, but the visitor center will take people down into the bedrock and to the slurry wall, 75 feet below the surface. And I think that experience, which cannot be represented on television and in any medium, will be so visceral, so powerful that you're standing there on a kind of a sacred place, but you're also looking at the foundations of these grand buildings. And I think New Yorkers are really just the best, because people in New York understand life and understand what it means, and also can deal with tragedies and move forward. And I think that's also the fantastic thing about Americans.
And I want to ask you, in February you told the Architects Journal that you're, quote, not interested in building gleaming streets for despots and that you stay away from what you call morally questionable clients. So are you making political statements with the projects that you choose to do? Are you drawn to historically significant, symbolic?
Politics sounds like a big word, but politeia in Greek, that's their origin, means the citizens. So, you know, it's a public art. It is an art, but it's a civic art. And therefore, it has a deep ethical emotion, a component. You have to be sure that the things you're working with, things who you're working with, are the people you choose to work with and you feel good about it. And I don't want to talk for others. I can only say that I'm very careful to work on things that I truly believe in. And that makes me feel that, you know, architecture is about public space. It's not just about someone with a lot of power to build a building.
Some of the other projects you've worked on, the Jewish Museum in Berlin, what's called a peace center on the site of a notorious prison in Belfast. Are you drawn to these potentially sort of culturally sensitive and significant spaces?
No, it's not that I'm drawn. I think everyone in late 20th century, 21st century has suffered through the dilemmas and the tragedies of our times. And certainly, I'm an architect who's interested in memory. I think memory is not an extra footnote to history, but it's the guiding dimension of how we build spaces. And to me, whether it's the Jewish Museum in Berlin, whether it's the Felix Nussbaum Museum, whether it's the project in Belfast to reconcile Catholic factions and Protestant at the Mays prison, whether it's the Military History Museum in Dresden in Germany, all of these sites touch upon memory. And I think without memory, we would not know who we are. We would not know where we are going. And every site has a memory. You know, not every site is as prominent as Ground Zero or as important a building as a museum dealing with history. But every site has a history. And I'm interested in that history, and I'm interested in how the memory allows that site to be developed.
I have been speaking to architect Danielle Libeskind. I just have one more question before you go. You mentioned you were a student when the World Trade Center was being built. You were a student at Cooper Union. So any opinion on the debate happening there about them charging tuition?
Well, look, everyone is dreadfully sorry that it has come to this. You know, I went to Cooper Union as a full scholarship student. and I benefited from the incredible school. But there is no doubt that the steps that are now being taken will help the school to survive into the future. And I believe that Cooper Union will always be a fantastic school, competitive, and that it will continue to be responsive to the fact that it will be a need-blind meritocracy that will serve the brightest kids regardless of income. So, yes, I believe in Cooper Union.
Architect Daniel Libeskind, his idea for this symbolic tower, 1,776 feet high, that spire is now in place. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehr on WNYC.